Good morning. This is Gail Sylvia, your host of SylviaGlobal.com. Joining me today is world-renowned designer and incredibly warm, wonderful man, is designer Randolph Duke in Los Angeles. Randolph?
I'm going to start dancing in just a moment. I love that music so much. You could keep playing it on and on, but we'll talk nevertheless, even with the music. I think it's fabulous, right? Nothing to cheer you up like a little music in the morning, right?
Absolutely right. We cannot seem to get past these technical difficulties here.
I think it must be me. We were having some trouble connecting by phone for the last couple of weekends, and we finally found a way. But I guess we're going to still have a few with the music. And if the music comes on, I'm just going to be dancing on my end. So I hope all the listeners out there, you know, it's actually a great segue for me because I know we're going to talk about a lot of things this morning that you want to ask me about. But one of the things I have to say is that, you know, that's such an interesting thing. God does amazing things. You know, when the music plays, sometimes it's a signal to get up and dance. And how often do we, you know, we not do those things that inspire us like that? And that's a huge part of my work with women, is inspiring them to feel beautiful. And sometimes that means dancing in your front yard, you know, even if the neighbors are looking, you know, put a hedge up. It means dancing in your backyard if you have one. It means dancing in your living room when the music comes on. Anything that makes you really feel beautiful. So that being said, I'm gonna toss it back to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the support and the lead-in here. You know, talk to us. Your name is most commonly, you know, very familiar to our listeners from the fashion world and creating beautiful designs, making beautiful women look exquisite. And on the
That's right. All women are beautiful. It's just a matter of helping them feel beautiful because, I really behold them as all beauty. And they say beauty is in the eye of the beholder. It's absolutely true. But for women to feel beautiful is a really important thing in this day and age. I think it's integral in their reality. And I have for years been dressing women. My whole career has been devoted, I think, in the service. And I think of it as a service to women in helping them attain that feeling. You know, I say feeling more than making, because one can't make somebody do or feel anything. We all know that. You could be absolutely beautiful to 9 out of 10 people or 10 out of 10 people. If you didn't feel that way, unfortunately, that would be your reality. And so often I hear so many women, you know, saying and thinking the same things, at least when they share their thoughts with me, when the moments get intimate and we're trying on gowns for an award show, or whether it's an everyday woman that I'm, you know, helping in a fitting room at a department store trying on one of my things, or a trunk show trying on one of my couture pieces at a fine department or specialty store. And that is that there's such a negative tendency, and I don't mean all women, I'm generalizing, but to criticize and to run this tape that kind of comes on when they start thinking about getting dressed. I've tried to address it as a least emotionally possible way that I can, because it's the only way to ultimately get past it. When you think about putting makeup on, you have a system for doing that in the morning. Otherwise, you'd probably get completely flustered. When you think about exercising, you've been taught a system for doing that so that you have results that start showing. When you're given a diet, there's even a system to that. I think the difficulty with clothing for women and truly expressing themselves from the inside out is they don't have a system often. They haven't been taught a way to dress, a way to honor what they love, and move more and more towards an individuality that expresses that. I think it's a peer pressure that starts very early in age for young girls, and I think it's been fueled largely by the media and pictures and technology that has now airbrushed and modified women to levels of perfection and heights of physical perfection that are not real. We're looking at images of women on magazines, models on magazines, that are highly airbrushed, highly altered, slimmed down, shrunken in, airbrushed to eliminate all wrinkles. And culturally, that's something that I think has made it very difficult for women to live up to those images. And I think it's daunting for many of them. You know, they feel they don't have the figures to compete. They don't have the complexions to compete. Their hair isn't full enough. Their bust line isn't perky enough, or the derriere isn't right, or they need to go on a diet. And the list goes on and on. I mean, I feel like part of me has to be Dr. Phil and the other part designer, truly, in this day and age to do my job well.
How would you teach this, or how would you instruct a mother, a father, a friend, a woman to learn this at an early age, you know, in a
healthy I think the first thing to do is to sort of, you have to really approach it from a psychological standpoint before you even think about getting dressed, particularly if you are somebody prone to that negative tape that runs through you every time you see a pretty model, or every time you feel like, oh dear, I have to get dressed for an occasion, and you start sweating, or you start thinking, oh my God, what am I going to wear, and, you know, I need to lose weight. And, you know, I was sitting next to a woman at a beautiful function last night, and she asked me to do a dress for her for AMFAR in Cannes, which is coming up, which is the event where, bless her heart, Elizabeth Taylor was so prominent and involved with, and Sharon Stone over the years. My dear friend was, involved in raising so much money for. And she said, and she started immediately saying, well, I can't wear this and I can't wear that. And it was all about the cans. Unsolicited, I just like set her off, and she said, you know, I'm not fat, I can wear strapless. And so I noticed how she was coming completely from what she felt were the negatives before she could tell me what she really wanted. And all I asked her is, what do you have in mind? And I find one of the things that you need to do as an exercise for women, and this is in my book, and it starts with a rather radical exercise. My book, The Look, A Guide to Dressing from the Inside Out, was a book I wrote when I finished it while I moved back to Los Angeles from New York, after I really took stock in thinking about what I had done the previous 18 years in New York and designing collection after collection. I'd heard so many women say to me, you know, I love what I see on the runway, but I can't wear it. I think there's a disconnect when it comes to fashion when they look at it in magazines. I notice women are very literal when they look at magazine pages. They see something very extreme, and they immediately think that that's meant to be something we're suggesting they wear, when it really is purely inspiration. One of the things I suggest is, like an exercise you would do or mental musculature you would develop, you go to the gym, you're not going to see results if you don't work out. You have to start changing your attitude. I think one of the things women need to do, there's three things really. Start by writing a one page, you know, like 8x11 letter size page, love letter to your body. I mean, it sounds kind of crazy, but I'd like to start seeing women practice not saying anything negative. You truly have to edit the negative thoughts out. So I ask them to write something about their body, and if they can't find anything positive to say, start thinking about how your body has helped you, you know, with the beautiful children you've raised and given birth to, or the legs that have walked you to work every day, or allow you to do what you do in your life if you have a physical job. Start finding almost, you know, technical things about it if you can't find anything, which I doubt you. I'm sure every woman can find something she loves about herself, although you'd be surprised. Often I ask a woman, what's your best feature? And she struggles with a laundry list of, well, I don't like my hair, and I wish my eyes were wider, and my hips are too big, and I'm a little bit pear-shaped, and I just have to stop her. And sometimes if her husband or boyfriend or significant other is there, he'll say, well, silly, it's your smile. You know, I mean, how beautiful that is, you know, that we forget that about ourselves. And this isn't just women in this day and age. I think it's men as well, because we are so bombarded with, you know, images on television of naked, you know, men with six packs, let alone 12 packs, shaving, and gorgeous women everywhere, celebrities gracing the covers of magazines that I said have been airbrushed and altered. And I think that we start to compare. We've done that from the time we were young. We always are measuring ourselves by another standard. So writing the one-page love letter is a great start. The second thing to do is to collect things that you like and create almost a little trousseau to yourself, really. And a lot of it can be done through imagery, since that's probably what we look at the most today, magazines, books, but it can be anything, really. Designers do it in the form of a mood board. When we start making a collection, we create a wall or a board where we pin on our favorite colors and a petal of, from a beautiful flower we love the color or shape of, or some beautiful trim we found on a vacation somewhere, or a piece of jewelry that's vintage that is inspiring for the detail and might turn into some beading or something on a garment later. It really can be anything. It can be abstract, for that matter. You know, what you'll start to see when you look back at these things, put them away in a private place, somewhere where they're just for you to look at. Take them out occasionally and start looking for the rhythm, for the repetition in what you've chosen. Start noticing that you pick a lot of black and white, or that you pick a lot of very graphic things, or that you love the color purple. You know, one of the things I never try to do is change a woman who is fully self-realized in who she is and what she likes. It may not be the mainstream taste level. It may not be even something I think is beautiful. But I hate all this television out there where people are criticizing or telling people what's good and bad. I think we run the real risk of people not thinking for themselves and expressing themselves. I think we're moving into a period of more individualism. It's not necessary to straighten your beautiful African-American curly hair because everybody else is doing that. It's really about celebrating self. And I think that's what we love in people that are unique and stand out. That's why we like people like Cher and Madonna and Bjork and, you know, women who in the past, I think, stood for real individuality. I was talking to a press person last night, and she said, you know, it's hard to think of who stands out today. I think that's very interesting. It's hard to think of who really stands out and makes a statement by being incredibly bold, but also incredibly self-confident in what they wear, whether people like it or not. And I think we're turning a corner where people will start going back to that. So create a little book for yourself, or a board for yourself, or something you can put away where you start pinning up or collecting in a book tear sheets. Those are pulls from a magazine. As you go through a magazine, rip out what you like, you know, and you'll start seeing that you're honing in a little bit more on honoring what you naturally like. It's the way, you know, it's the way you taste food. I always make the analogy with food that you know what you like when it comes to food. It's not a mystery. You don't need to be taught how to eat, taught how to like what you like. Clothing isn't that difficult. You just think it is. Women just think it's this big mysterious thing. It truly is about honoring what you like. Floral prints versus menswear type of patterns. Or maybe you love the menswear patterns and the pinstripes and the more tailored things. Or maybe you like mixing leopard and menswear patterns. That seems very advanced, but maybe you like both. And you can mix those kinds of things today. The rules are all gone. And I think that is one of the things that makes it harder for women to get dressed today. There is no uniform any longer. We're not living in the 50s where every woman wears a hat and gloves, or the Mad Men era where women looked polished but had to wear all of those foundations and constricting girdles. Again, a time where they were manipulating the image of women to be something of a social standard. It's incredibly free today. You know, you can stand in line at a bank making a deposit and see a woman in a sari, and this is not an Indian woman. You can see another girl who's kind of dressed like a punk rocker. You can see another woman who's dressed very tailored like a businesswoman. I love the diversity of the times we live in, and so self-expression is even that much more important.
You know, the exercise of being kind to yourself and writing a love letter to yourself, a lot easier said than done, but writing a love letter to oneself is easier for most women than standing in front of the mirror naked.
And well, I have another exercise. It's funny you should say that in my book, and it is a mirror exercise. But I have a little trick to make that easier. It's called the paper bag exercise. Now, this is going to sound a little crazy.
You're going to put the...
But
yes.
I'll tell you what makes it easier. If you take a paper bag from the grocery store, you know, one that will fit over your head and your
not
hair
that
comfortably, and you cut two circles out for your eyes to see through.
Yes.
Try cutting that out, and this is actually in my book, and put it over your head. Stand in front of the mirror in a private place where you can, preferably a three-way mirror, but a mirror will be fine, full-length mirror. Put the bag over your head before you stand in front of the mirror, and then stand in front of the mirror. The idea is to kind of critique your body objectively and this is an exercise that isn't as much the love letter, but as one that shows you how, when you detach yourself from the emotionality of looking at yourself and become more objective about your proportion, it becomes easier for you to figure out what the right choices are going to be in choosing clothing for you. It's almost the way men dress, really. When you think about it, when a man tries a suit on and it doesn't fit, he doesn't run screaming out of the fitting room saying,
no,
oh, my God, I need to go
no,
on a diet.
No,
he goes, I need to go to a tailor. I can call the tailor. They call the tailor in. It's very unemotional. The tailor comes in. They tailor the suit to be kind of the most flattering it can be on the male physique.
Yeah.
And when a woman tries a dress on in the dressing room and it doesn't fit, she runs out screaming, goes home, and probably eats a pint of Häagen-Dazs.
That's correct.
You know, it's a very emotional experience. When you do this paper bag exercise, it allows you to experience something very unique. You don't see your body as much as your own. Truly try this, ladies, because when you put that paper bag over your face, you're not looking at you any longer. You're looking at kind of a silhouette, an object, a sculpture. And you can truly say, well, I think the hips are wider than the shoulders, so I don't really have a perfect hourglass look. It's not critical as much as it is more technical and even clinical to some extent. As a result, you can then define what your shape is. And in my book, I talk about knowing how to dress for your proportions. I think the biggest problem I see when I see any woman walking down the street or anywhere for that matter is she got the proportions wrong. It's not as much about the color or the choices of print, fabric. It's the proportions that she got wrong. She didn't dress appropriate for her shape. And the reason that happens a lot is women are too obsessed with size. Size has nothing to do with it. First of all, there's something called vanity sizing today, which means that every line is sized differently. People vanity size, which means they size down. An 8 today is sometimes called a 4, you know, and they say that it's changed so drastically from the 50s that sizes are all different today. They're just completely out of whack. And every house, whether it's a designer brand or a less expensive brand, are sized differently. So you can't really buy by size anymore because you could vary, you know, 2 or 3 sizes depending on what the brand is. You know, Coco Chanel used to say fashion is architecture. It's a matter of proportions. I think that was a very wise statement for a woman who really brought the jacket to women. You know, she was the first to really bring a male item of clothing to women in a significant way. And I think what was miraculous about that was the jacket, and one of the reasons I think it's such a security blanket of sorts is that it does give you a frame. It gives you a shape and an architecture. You put it on and you have an instant silhouette. Sometimes softer dressing, wearing dresses, wearing slinkier things, wearing tighter things, it's difficult to get that silhouette. A jacket can often give you that. So it may be why men have a bit of an advantage when it comes to wearing suits and calling the tailor up. But, you know, I think the main thing I love about that statement is that fashion is about proportions, and getting the proportions right is essential.
How does the woman's changing... How does their image change as we age, and how does the industry, how do we look away from the industry and into ourselves, you know, for embracing these changes, you know, beyond just the moment? You know, we're not the same body at 12 that we have at 25, that we have at 35, that we have at 60, you know, and what suggestions do you have about the attitude of embracing the changing images throughout life cycles?
Well, I think it's true. I mean, there is a lot of youth culture-oriented thinking. Everything seems to be pop culture, getting younger and younger as we speak. Our American Idol stars are now 16, and they sing like they're, you know, veterans of stage and polish, almost to a point of it being a bit scary. They're so polished. I worry about how much authenticity there really is in that versus how much copying or mimicking or kind of they've gotten very, very clever at a generation of, and I don't want this to be taken the wrong way, but of posing. And the reason I say posing is when I see young girls that can pose like Charlize Theron on the red carpet. I know that they've learned that somewhere, that they've studied that somewhere. And the risk is that it becomes a bit not felt and a bit posed, you know, a bit literally kind of faked, copied. And not that that hasn't gone on always, but I think it's reached a point where there's such a push on young girls, you know, seeming more mature for their age. And I think what it does is it starts at an early age, a young girl not always allowing herself to evolve in a natural, organic way and find who she is. And suddenly, you know, at 12, 13, 14, they're practicing in front of a mirror how to walk on a red carpet. It's kind of a celebrity-obsessed world, but unfortunately, it's very fed by the media again. You know, we're putting celebrities on the covers of magazines. We idolize celebrities to a point of I think, many young people identifying with them as the end-all of happiness and good fortune. And,
do you see
and the risk-
changing?
Sorry?
Do you see that changing?
I don't see it changing soon, but like everything, things run in a cyclical stage. We had an age of supermodels on magazines. Then we had an age in the early 90s of kind of lesser-known models, not supermodels. That didn't seem to work. So then celebrities on magazines became the way to sell publications. I don't know if it will change. It doesn't seem to be lessening up. I think there's a replacement for a lot of young girls of thinking that fame on some levels is a replacement for love. You know, and I think that that's a bold statement for me to make, but I think that in many cases, if you ask a young girl or a young person, and I keep saying women and girls, but the truth is this is for everybody. If you ask young people what they want to be today, I think you have far few people saying, I want to be, you know, I want to discover a cure for a disease, or I want to, and I'm not saying that this isn't out there. There's some incredible kids out there that are doing incredibly adult things at young ages in the areas of mind and science and very cerebral things, as well as these more superficial and fame-oriented and pop culture-oriented things I'm talking about right now. But there is a proliferance of young girls that say they want to be, you know, a star. They, in some form or another, they want to be a singer, they want to be or they'll just say a person, you know, I want to be Jessica Simpson, or I want to be, you know, a recording star. I notice there are always things that are famous, though, you know. I worry about people that you know, and losing sight of service industry kind of jobs and things that might be truer to what their true gift is.
How did you, this line of thinking and this concern become important to you? What happened in your career, in your life, that caused you to kind of step back and look at the industry?
Well, I think some downtime really did it for me. I had been working in New York for about 18 years, and sometimes I like to say I was on a bit of a self-imposed hamster wheel, because there was a method to sort of penetrating the high fashion world and to being part of the club. Not that you can ever necessarily penetrate that or become a part of the club, but there is a bit of a pecking order in doing that, and part of that is performing twice a year on an international stage of showing your fashions, but having to do something kind of miraculous, which is not just impress the stores to buy your product, but impress fashion editors who are only lifting their pads to make notes when something comes down the runway that they deem as new, unusual, unique, special, authentic, and individual. That's tough. That's tough, because at the same time, you have stores looking at the merchandise who tend to look towards things that have proven themselves in the past. They tend to be more sales-oriented. They think about the woman more. They think what's selling now, what's sold in the past. They don't tend to be as visionary sometimes. So you have this dichotomy of avant-garde from the press looking for new things to put on their pages. And you have to find a balance. You really do have to find a balance. And so when I left New York and came to Los Angeles, I took some deserved time off and started thinking about all of these things in my career and how they applied to how I wanted to move forward. I knew I needed to take a breath and do some work on myself. And in that time, I I became sick. I was diagnosed with cancer, and shortly after that I was diagnosed with some heart disease, which is all good now. I've taken care of myself, and it's, you know, your body is really everything. If you don't take care of it, then you really won't have to worry at all about what you're wearing.
What did you do differently? What did you do differently in terms of...
I worked less hard, and I worked a little bit more on me and less on pushing out to, you know, in many ways, I think I was victim of the same thing I'm kind of articulating. I see in a lot of young people the drive and the need to prove something and to be something. I think I had a bit of, I think of some of my drive had been channeled from the artistic nature of when I was younger. It had fallen into a bit of a rut of becoming, trying to prove something in the high fashion world of New York. It takes a lot of honesty to look at yourself and realize you've gotten a little off track. Like, what is the reason I began doing this in the first place? Where's the joy? Where's the thrill of going to work every day and creating something unique? Or am I trying to create something that they're going to give me a gold star for? You know, hence my talking about the press loving it and the buyers loving it. Ultimately, you really do have to be true to yourself. And I do think that is starting to change. I do think that the press, you know, recognizes when somebody is authentic. And I think they appreciate it. Excuse me. And in terms of the commerciality of product, it's one of those things we have to be careful not to lump old thoughts into new patterns and ways. You know, I don't really tolerate when people say things like everything between Los Angeles and New York is kind of a cultural a blur, or sometimes even stronger statements than that. I highly disagree with ever thinking of the customer as anything less than sophisticated. I think everybody has the internet today. People have access to seeing imagery of all sorts of fashions and ways of dressing themselves. I think it largely boils down to how it applies to their lifestyle. Is it applicable for their lifestyle? Can they afford it? These aren't issues of taste level. These aren't issues of sophistication. They're issues of, I just can't afford it, and I have nowhere to wear it. Excuse me. It's as simple as that.
Where is joy? Oh, go ahead.
So I think that, you know, we have to be careful not to make these generalizations. And I think I've always prided myself on, and particularly, you know, all my years at HSN, where I was really dealing with customers that could watch me from the comfort of their living rooms, you know, or their bedrooms on TV, and I could help educate them and provide them with clothing that was affordable, at once well-designed and multifunctional.
What advice would you give to someone who aspires to be the next Randolph Duke?
To not try to be Randolph Duke, to try to be, you know, to try to be just who you are, to really be. I think that's a very well-asked question, because I think that's what I'm seeing a lot of. We kind of idolize other people who have, you know, maybe come before us, or we think there's a way to do it. And I think that we're entering an age where truly being original is being true to oneself. It's about being authentic. And I think that's the way to feel the most successful in life, is when you really are doing something that you know is great for you, that you know you're good at. And that is always something that defines your style, defines your originality, defines who you are, you know, when you find your way to do it. I would say that the best advice I could give any young person wanting to go into fashion would be simply one thing. It's three words, and I have no regrets. But if I were to do it again, I would do these three words a little bit more, and that's ask for help. I noticed that people love to be a part of other people's success. I wish I'd known that when I was younger. I wish I'd known that it wasn't so much about proving yourself. There really is nothing to prove. People love to help. They really do love to help. It's part of our nature. It's part of our instinct. I think when you ask people to help you, doesn't mean you're going to do exactly what they say, but if you ask for their opinion or if you ask for their help, I think they really want to. And I think in the fashion industry, it's a collaborative art. It's a collaborative effort. It's a collaborative career. You're not a fine artist sitting at a canvas working in a solitary way. You are reliant upon so many people to make you look good, from pattern makers, technical people like seamstresses and beaters and hand finishers and people that press clothing and people that weave fabrics and people that truck those clothes to the store and people that unpack those clothes out of the boxes and steam them to put them on hangers. When you think about it, by the time the public sees the creation you've made, it has touched so many hands that unless you're collaborative in spirit, it's probably not going to be a successful career for you. You have to be able to allow many other people to make you look good. And, you know, it's not like baking a pie. You could do that alone. It's not like creating a sculpture. You could do that alone. It's not like dancing a ballet. I suppose you could do that alone if you were, you know, in your backyard where you can do it. But if you're with a company, then you are reliant. But there are many fine arts where you don't have to be as reliant on kind of the technical team you need to build a fashion business today.
Do you need to get some water? It sounded like you were getting, you okay?
No, I think I'm just talking so much that I'm trying to impart all this information that I'm getting a little choked up. But no, I'm fine.
You said that there are three things. Ask for help. What are the other two?
Ask for help, I think, would be the number one thing. Three words is what I meant, not three things.
Okay.
Three words. There's only one thing that I can think of as the best advice, because I think it's really important that you find your own road and that you don't follow rules too strictly. You know, I think I see a lot of kids in school, and I look at their work, and I often judge fashion competitions at the end of graduations. And I feel that sometimes they've railed these kids in a little bit too far in the early part of their career instead of letting their imagination run free. There'll be plenty of time to do that in the end. There'll be plenty of time to think commercially in the end. But I think there's so many more children and students today in fashion schools than ever before, with the popularity of things like Project Runway and, you know, America's Top Model and things that revolve around the world of fashion, that I think it's thought of as a much more it's much more mainstream, I think, than it ever was. You know, and in many ways, much of the arts are today, with shows like Dancing with the Stars and American Idol. I think careers in the arts are proliferating because we see so much of it in the media and so much on television. It's a good thing. I don't know if there are jobs for all of those designers out there. So there may be a profusion of many designers starting their own companies. To do that, you really need to ask for help, and that's why I say those words, because you can't build a fashion company on your own. You do need to ask for help.
Closing question. Where is the joy in your life now? What brings you joy?
Creativity. It's the simplest question to answer. When I'm not creative, I don't always know I'm not happy, but I'll think, God, something's missing. I just feel a little bit down. I don't know, what is it? Why do I feel this way? And then it'll sort of dawn on me. I'm not in my creativity. I'm not doing something creative. And that doesn't mean designing dresses. That can mean everything from creating a beautiful garden to changing the decor in my home, going and buying some new fresh paint to do something different with the color in my home. I think people forget that creativity isn't always this thing that escapes them. It's as easy as going to, you know, your Home Depot and picking paint chip colors and putting them up on your wall and seeing if they change your mood, your spirit. People live in a bit of a fixed way. They never move their sofa. They never change where their dining room is. When I said at the beginning of the show, when the music starts playing and you feel like dancing, that's your cue. That means that's creativity. When you start moving freely with your body and letting yourself do something that might look kooky, quirky, strange, and weird, forget what anybody else thinks. Just get up and dance in your backyard. You know, if it's a hot day, put the sprinkler on. There's tremendous joy in that. But that's creativity. And creativity is painting your bedroom a different color and seeing how it changes your mood. So that's what I do. I find that if my creativity isn't flowing, I don't have the channel for creativity, I get out and do something creative. And don't limit how you think about creativity. Today, creativity is everything from computer programming to physics to, it's not just fine art things. We used to think of creativity as, you know, you'd be in school and somebody would say to you, oh, you're so creative because you could draw or because you could paint or because you could dance. But it shouldn't be limited to those things. I mean, we live in a highly technological era where some of the most creative people, I think, are technological wizards. You know, I can't do that. So I have tremendous respect to create incredible programs on the computer. That's very creative. I think it keeps your mind young, it keeps your mind alive and working, and it keeps you happy. Because when you're creating, you're really doing what God put you here on this planet to do. We're born in creation, and we have to continue creating. It's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. To be creative, I think, is the ultimate link to joy.
Randolph Duke, you're absolutely wonderful. Thank you for being my guest. Will you dance with me? I'm going to turn the music on.
I'm going to turn it on. So just get up and dance to the music and enjoy your day. It's a fabulous day to be self-expressive. And thank you so much for this opportunity. I really enjoyed
it. Thank you for being with Sylvia Global, Randolph. God bless you.
Big kiss. Bye-bye.